Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Yeah, what up? Third hour here on Tiki and Tierney.
The Tiki and Tierney Show.
Coming to you from the Rocket Mortgage Studio. When you need certainty in the home buying process with a loan that fits your life, Rocket can. Come on in. If you've been here, stick around another hour. Hope all is well. On Twitter, of course, a lot of things to weigh in on. I know we've put a lot of clips up from earlier in the show, which we always do, whether it's about some of the basketball stuff, the baseball conversation we had, some good things to react to. Check it out. Twitter, Tiki and Tierney. Instagram as well. Same thing, Tiki and Tierney. YouTube.com/Tiki and Tierney. If you missed something else, by the way, just go to Odyssey, all right? Use the Odyssey app and just type in our names. All the content comes right up. So a great direct connection to Tiki and Tierney, all the shows here at CBS Sports Radio. All right, so let's face it. You know, we are enamored with skill position players. I've been guilty of this. There's been years where, I mean, every year my team seemingly needs everything, but there's been years where I've become overly fixated on the splash players, the receivers, all the vertical tight end, all the running back who's going to, you know, dominate the NFL, more so with the running back in the day. But certainly more recently, tight ends and wide receivers, guys with wiggle, guys all going to tilt the field, going to be that sudden play, right? And when you do that, you know, invariably, you tend to, even if you don't want to do it, you minimize the importance of, I mean, everybody knows you need a left tackle, but guards, and we saw what Quentin Nelson did for the Colts a couple of years back at six. He's a superstar. They took a guard at six. That kind of changed some thought processes. I think that, you know, we're at an interesting point because so much speculation about will the first four players, depending upon what the Falcons do it for, and you think they're going to take a quarterback, I think they trade out or take somebody else, and we'll see. But there's a good possibility that you're right and that four quarterbacks go off the board one through four in succession and that other teams move up to get either a Pitts or a Devontae Smith or Chase or a lot of these skill position players. And if that happens, what that's going to create, Teague, is some incredible, I hate to sound like a draft nick, some incredible value, but it's going to create some maybe unexpected value and maybe some historical value because we've never had a quarterbacks go one through four where you might say, all right, you know what? Oh, man, I love Chase. He's a good player. Man, Smith is sick from Alabama. But you know what? Look around the league. There's wide receivers from the middle rounds all over, you know, going for 1,000 yards and winning championships and scoring 9 or 10 touchdowns. Maybe I just incentivize other teams to come trade up, knock on my door to get those aforementioned splash players.
Yeah.
And I'll willingly trade back and I'll collect some more draft equity and I'll just draft all these studs on defense.
Well, here's the problem, BD, is that right now we are, and we'll hit this next segment after what Stank, Mark Schlereth said regarding quarterbacks and the obsession with them for a lot of teams and GMs because they just feel desperate to get one and they think that the unknown is often better than, you know, what you have in your own pocket already. So I think that quarterbacks get artificially inflated, especially when there are multiple teams that are quarterback needy. Even teams that have quarterbacks, like the 49ers, they have a pretty good one in Jimmy Garoppolo. Took them to the Super Bowl a couple of years just for your sake, but they traded up to get another one. You know, you've heard this many times, actually, this offseason. It's kind of the first time that I have heard it, where teams are talking about stacking quarterbacks, right? You heard this about the Falcons. You heard a little bit about the Patriots with Cam Newton and maybe even trading for Jimmy Garoppolo. Like you're starting to hear this more and more and more. Why you would do it, I'm not so sure, but it's just a narrative that we'll hit in our next segment. But the reality is that if you looked at a big board, like a team's big board, mm-hmm. and a big board is different than the draft board. The big board is who are the best prospects in the 2021 NFL draft. Mm-hmm. There are only probably two quarterbacks, and we know who the first one is in Trevor Lawrence. The second one's probably Justin Fields.
I disagree. I think it's Zach Wilson on most people's boards. I'm not even talking about myself. On most people's boards, I believe it's Zach Wilson.
I think
over
Zach
Fields.
Wilson
no
is
question.
On, I think Zach Wilson is number two on quarterback on draft boards. But you're missing what I'm saying.
No,
talking,
I know exactly what you're saying.
I'm talking about the big board.
I know what you're
There's
saying.
No way you can say that Zach Wilson.
I'm with, saying with what other people are saying.
With what he's done in college. Is the number two quarterback prospect in this draft? It's just not feasible.
But that's what they're saying. I'm just saying what they're saying.
The big
not
board
even what
to
I'm
me
saying.
Is based on
what I'm
did,
saying it to
is what you did on what you did in college. The big board really is Trevor Lawrence. It's Kyle Pitts. It's Ja'Marr Chase. It's I'm trying to think
maybe Devontae Smith.
Yeah, Devontae Smith. Fields is up there as I mentioned.
Parsons.
Yeah, Parsons. Sewell obviously. Penei Sewell,
Oregon.
Yeah, from Oregon. So that's the big board.
No, I get the difference.
I
get it.
The reality is that there are some great defensive players in this draft that are just gonna get overlooked because we're obsessed with draft boards and offensive skill position players. Players, in particular, quarterbacks. There's two that I'll point out. And the reason that we're having some of this uncertainty and teams are rising to the top to grab these quarterbacks or skill position players that we're just talking about, even if they're not that high on the big board, is because this is probably the most uncertain offseason leading into a draft that we've ever seen. So many players opted out, BT.
Yep.
A ton of them just said, and I'm talking about like elite players from Gregory Rousseau down in Miami. To Caleb Farley from Virginia Tech. He was actually the first one.
Yes.
Sewell, who we mentioned.
Yep. Did you say Parsons?
I didn't say Parsons. Michael Parsons from Penn State. Yep. Like a lot of these guys just, Ja'Marr Chase, they just opted out, didn't play.
I know.
And so your data points are so limited, right? It's like,
and then you have less accessibility because of the pandemic.
Exactly.
So like, that's a problem.
Where's the combine? There's no combine where you can actually, pull and prod and, get your team doctor to check this guy out and then go sit into a room with this guy for 20 minutes or 30 minutes and have an interview, see him run and work out, stand there in his underwear on a block, right? None of that happened. Mm-hmm. It's all controlled environments in these kids' home pro days. And I guess it benefits the kids, but it just creates some uncertainty, some like that little like inkling of doubt. And when you have some doubt, what teams are going to do are going to go, well, this is the guy that I loved. And even if data doesn't back it up, that's who I'm going to go with. That's why you're seeing these guys run up these draft boards.
Yep. Let me ask you this. Do you think, well, it's almost impossible to answer, but I want to hear your theory behind as you take us through it. Do you think that more players drop from the previous year, highly regarded player, or
no? I think they elevate. I think the opposite. Is that what you're going to ask?
I was because
I think they elevate, and here's why.
I'm not talking about just quarterbacks. I'm talking about everybody.
I'm not talking about quarterbacks.
Because to me, Devontae Smith is dropping. There was a point people were saying Devontae Smith go second overall.
But hold
now
on.
I see him going 11.
But this
12.
Is different. Devontae Smith played. We saw him play. Right. And, he actually lifted his value with this season. Because let's not forget, coming into this year, Jalen Waddle was thought to be the better prospect at not really wide receiver, but as a skill position player. Because
no question about it.
He can return kicks. He led the NCAA in punt returns two seasons ago. Mm-hmm. He was obviously a dynamic wide receiver as well, probably the more dynamic of the wide receivers in people's minds for this Alabama team for this 2020 season. He gets hurt. Devontae Smith fills that void and wins every award, like literally every award for a wide receiver this past season. So he was amazing. So I think his draft stock may be falling because he's 170 pounds, but the kid's a baller. He's going to go somewhere, and it doesn't matter whether he's top 10 or somewhere in the 20s, right? He's going to go ball because that's just who he is. You know what I mean? He's not motivated by being you know, the I was a top 10 pick. You know what I mean? He's not Odell Beckham Jr. type.
He's right? All football. He's not into the nonsense. All football. He's all ball.
All he cares about. So yep. It doesn't even matter. I'm not even worried about him where he gets picked because I know he's going to go ball in the mm-hmm. NFL. I saw him play too many times in person. I'm talking about the guys that opted out because that's where I thought you were going. Do you think these guys who opted out are getting artificially inflated?
That was the connection I was going to make.
Because
exactly.
Because there's a void, right? It's like, where's the data? And so you look at a guy like Gregory Rousseau, and I keep bringing him up because Miami has they have three defensive ends. One of them didn't play, obviously, in Rousseau. Mm-hmm. And Jalen Phillips, who's probably the highest rated of their three, Quincy Roche, and then Rousseau, they have three defensive ends coming into this draft, and two of them might get drafted in the first round.
But Rousseau's definitely highest by far.
Yes, definitely, because he's intriguing, and we don't know. He had one season, one great season, yep. 15 and a half sacks. He had 51 tackles. He was just dominant. And then he opts out. And so it's like, oh, was that a one-hit wonder? Is he like, did people just not know who he is? Uh-huh. But then you go back and you look at, well, okay, let's figure out who Gregory Rousseau is. In high school, he was a wide receiver, BT.
Was he really?
Yes, he was a linebacker, right? So in your mind, you're going, dude, this dude is like athlete.
Yeah.
Right. And he's big. He's 267. He ran a 4.67, 40. Like he's got all the physical skills and he's got like athletic ability of a wideout. And, you know, he has the mind of a middle linebacker. This kid, even though he didn't play and we have one data point on him, at least one season of data on him. He's my guy. So he's going to run up the people's draft boards because that uncertainty has to be filled with something. And people start speculating.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of speculation that's going to happen this draft. Now, it could be good for some people because they just get lucky. Mm-hmm. It could be horrendous for others because they overestimate players and draft them way too high.
Boy, the thing about Rousseau, I mean, 2'6", I didn't know he played wide receiver in high school. That's insane. So,
yeah. So you can tell, he got to Miami and just got jacked.
Yeah, so right? He's got the wheels, he's got the intellect to play linebacker because he's seeing what's in front of him. He's obviously got the burst on the edge, getting to the quarterback almost 16 times. But what I was going to ask you, I don't know his body type enough. Can he naturally put on 12 to 15 more pounds without losing? He can play 267 in 5 years. And
doesn't need to. I mean, okay. think about how DNs have changed, BT.
Yeah.
It's become, like, I remember Michael Strahan.
Like, in Ngakoue, lean.
That's right. That's okay, right. I remember Strahan, when I first got to the Giants, he was, I thought he was a monster.
Yeah.
He was like 280 or 285 or something. And I was like, dude, you're like, this is the big league, man. These guys are huge.
Yeah.
By the end of my career and the end of his, he was like 267, 265. Mm-hmm. Right, and he leaned out. He was a better pass rusher because he was more nimble, could get around, run around defensive offensive tackles, and he was just more agile. That the edge rusher doesn't necessarily have to hold up to run blocking, you know, like he used to. I remember back in the day, Simeon Rice. You remember him?
Of course,
right when he was with Arizona.
Absolutely,
when Simeon he was Rice. With the Cardinals. All he wanted to do was rush the passer. Like he wasn't on the blind side, so to speak. He wasn't on the blind side. He was on the front side, right? And when we play him, our game plan was to run sprint, like which is a zone, outside zone.
Going out.
Run sprint right at him.
Because he wants to go to the quarterback, you're going right by him.
Exactly. So he has no interest in creating an edge. Uh-huh. And so we knew that line the hole would just expand because he's running away from all the motion coming towards him.
Yep.
That type of D end is gone now. I mean, these guys are, they're wiry strong and they're athletic as hell and they can play the run just as well as they rush the passer. And Gregory Rousseau, presumably, off of 1 year of data points, is that guy.
I feel like the position, let's do a little bit on cornerback here.
Mm-hmm.
If we spend so much time on the quarterbacks throwing the ball to the wideouts, we got to spend a little time on the guys who are going to be stopping the guys who are catching the ball from the quarterbacks.
Yep.
And I know there's some good names. Surtain, he's got the bloodlines. Farley from Virginia Tech, we talked about him. But I don't feel like there's, unless I'm missing somebody, like I feel like while there's some very intriguing cornerback prospects, right?
Yeah.
No doubt, like the shell of who they are, their data points are impressive. But I feel like maybe more this year than other years, there's a lot more questions with the corners. But yet they got like 3, 4, 5 maybe going to the first round. Is that worthy or is that a reach at a position that teams are starting to reach out as well.
Well, I think when you look at the corners that are coming out this year, one is Patrick Surtain, who you mentioned. And imagine this. You are a freshman at the University of Alabama, and you end up starting.
Yeah.
Right,
and you're covering those guys in practice
exactly.
every day.
A freshman at the University of Alabama, and you're starting.
Yep.
You're a baller,
yep.
And that's what Patrick Surtain has done.
Now, but I'm not disputing that. But I've seen some plays.
Oh
on
yeah,
tape
he was vulnerable. I was getting ready to say that.
Turned around.
Yeah.
I'm like this is.
He was vulnerable, BT. At
okay,
certain points.
So
it's why.
What do we do?
It's why, to be honest with you, a lot of people have J.C. Horn from South Carolina rated higher because he's big. I mean, he's like a Seattle Seahawks corner.
Range
6'1",
yep, yep,
210
yep.
pounds,
yep.
right? He ran a blazing 40. He prevents separation. But these guys who are game-changing players, talking obviously these edge rushers that we were mentioning before, Gregory Rousseau's, maybe Patrick Surtain, J.C. Horn, these guys are not being talked about at all because we're so enamored with the quarterbacks and who they're going to be throwing the football to.
Yep.
And so to your point, BT, there are going to be some steals, like highly rated players, big board players, right, that I'm talking about now, not the
yep.
draft board,
I got you.
The
I got,
big
I got
board
you.
Players yeah. who aren't on people's radars, at least not according to the draft nicks that we're seeing out there, mm-hmm. that are going to get drafted and wreck havoc, and people are going to be like, man, I didn't know that guy was that good. It's because mm-hmm. we're so enamored this year with the quarterbacks and all the skill position players around them.
And not necessarily in the 11-12 slot, which happened. You're talking about maybe in that 19, 23, 26
yeah.
range where
yeah.
guys could plummet and
That's
you
right.
get a gem who's going to be getting that second contract guaranteed.
That's right.
With the team. No, I hear you. Listen, this is the most unique draft we've had in a long time.
It really is. It really
is. For a lot of reasons.
There's not a lot of data points. I keep coming back to that.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's going to be a ton of fluctuation in perception of these players in the next week and a half or 2 weeks before the NFL draft. It's
yeah.
just it's bizarre. It's kind of awesome, but it is what it is, man.
And any draft that's got, you know, at least four, maybe a fifth, but probably four. I don't think Trask is going back into the first round. Some
yeah.
people say even though I like him, I don't see that happening.
Yeah.
But when you have a draft where there's at least guaranteed four quarterbacks going, even if they don't go in succession 1 through 4, they're going in the top 12, all four of them. And I would say way before that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that alone adds the intrigue. But now you're talking about generational, at least theoretically, wide receivers. I mean, offensive, Darisaw,
right.
who we had on from Virginia
yeah.
Tech, Slater, who I love from Northwestern.
Yeah.
There are some.
Well, the problem, BT, is that we know that half of those quarterbacks are going to be a bust.
Yeah.
So if you are speculating, as I believe too, that four of these guys are going to get drafted in the top 12, maybe 10, maybe
mm-hmm.
four.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Right. Half of them aren't going to pan out. And so two teams are wasting their first-round draft pick in 2021.
Why when you hear Schlereth's rant, and we'll get into that coming up, you know, talk about throwing a dart right in the middle of the bullseye. He crushed it. I mean, 50% miss rate for quarterbacks. Why all the energy, all the belief, a lot of which is blind towards these quarterbacks in terms of completely reversing directions of franchises? Why do we invest that much in a position that hits so little? We'll get to that coming up next. Tiki and Tierney, CBS Sports Radio. With the first pick in the 2020. Listen, there is nothing more galvanizing as a fan, and I mean pertaining to every aspect of sport. That includes baseball, that includes hockey, that includes the NBA, even though the NBA kind of comes close if it's one of those years with one of those special players. But there is nothing more galvanizing for a fan base than when, you know, a young, you know, freshly suited up young buck strides across the stage, you know, gets the half-hearted fake, you know, dap from the commish, gets a jersey, he's the quarterback, and it's a pathway to dreams. It's a pathway to relevance. I mean, I'm not talking about in the third round. The first round, when your team takes a quarterback in the first round, you are just, not that you always agree with the player that they took, but you are so quickly hooked on the possibility of things changing that it is like a drug.
Yeah.
It is like a drug. It is amazing. And as we know, about 50% of those players, they don't hit, and they bust hard. And we all know so many of those names going back to the start of football time. So, Mark Schlereth, we had Stink on the show, I guess it was a couple of weeks ago. He was on the McAfee show, and he was riffing about the the mindset of teams, how they perceive these, you know, these saving grace quarterbacks that he doesn't know why. Just listen to this.
We act as though every guy that plays quarterback is going to come fix our franchise. Like, if it didn't work with Sam Darnold, why do you think you could put him in that same situation or another quarterback in the same situation and have it work this time? The good old things that actually work, right? Which is building a football team, having good football players. Like, to me, from the quarterback position, there are four or five guys who are unicorns, who cover warts. The rest of the guys expose warts. So you're selling this bill of goods to your fan base that's absolute garbage. Now we're going to fix it because now we got Zach Wilson. And then 3 years from now we're going to fix it because we'll take the next guy. Just doesn't work that way. Build a football team. Don't just draft quarterback after quarterback.
All right, I'm old. Listen, there's nobody who's down for a good rant as much as I am. I love it. I love it. But I think, with all due respect, Schlereth is all over the map on that. To me, that doesn't make a whole lot of sense. And the guy's forgotten more football than I'll ever know, my entire family tree, I admit. But, you know, because first he brings up Darnold, right? And he says, well, you know, why would Darnold fail in New York? And then why would he succeed in Carolina? Oh, I don't know. Maybe because Carolina's going to put five guys in front of him who know how to, I don't know, block like Schlereth used to do so well. And there's a guy named Christian McCaffrey. Fling a little pass in the flats, take it 80 yards to the house because they've got innovative offensive concepts. That's why. Why would Zach Wilson work? Oh, I don't know. Maybe because now they're going to start finally drafting interior guys. Like, I understand what he means, but it's a bit of an erroneous, like, he goes in a direction where he loses me because, yeah, the quarterback is the sexy aspect of the equation. Yes. But we all know, I mean, I don't care how little football you know, if you take a guy with no weapons, he's going to get destroyed, and he's going to fail 1,000% of the time.
Yeah, but I think what Schlereth is saying is that we continually want teams to take quarterbacks despite the fact that there aren't the teams aren't built around them, right? We want the success to just happen, right? We want the Pat Mahomes story. But the Pat Mahomes story only transpired because the Kansas City Chiefs were a well-built organization already, right? They had a decent O-line. They had an elite level of skill position players. Obviously, an excellent head coach in Andy Reid, an offensive coordinator, and Eric Bieniemy, right? It worked because they were set up already for success when they took their quarterback. And so every year, it's almost like we forget about the building blocks of success. Think of the Indianapolis Colts. Like, for years, it was just like, all we got to do is find that quarterback to replace Peyton Manning. Oh, we got Andrew Luck right after we got rid of Peyton Manning. Oh, look at us. And look, they were good. They made the postseason. But very quickly, it deteriorated. And Andrew Luck took the brunt of that deterioration and injury after injury to the point where he retired after 6 years, right, in the league. And so the Colts got smart. All right, I guess we do got to draft some offensive linemen and build something up around what ultimately will be the most important position. But you got to have that base before you go clamoring for a quarterback. And I think what Schlereth is saying is too many teams don't have that base built before they go grab this top-end quarterback at the top of the draft.
But I also think he's ignoring the most important aspect of the equation, aside from pure talent and transferability from college to the pros, and that's the finances. Part of the reason why there's so much excitement, of course, it's derived from one's talent. Like, you look at, okay, wow, Zach Wilson, all these off-platform plays. Wow, Trevor Lawrence, been his stud since his freshman year. Big, strong, fast, got a gun. Oh, my, Justin Fields can throw it 70 yards on a string, fast. He ran a 4.43 40, fastest 40 since RG3 back in the day. Like, we point to their physical prowess. That's what excites us, but I think the move that emboldens the team to take another quarterback is the fact that you've got to restart the clock. Yeah. I can promise you, if the finances for quarterbacks today weren't as punitive as they are, the Jets would have kept Sam Darnold. Mm-hmm. There's no doubt in my mind they would have kept Sam Darnold.
Yeah.
And they would have traded out, and they would have drafted Sewell or Chase or whatever they would have done. And they would have rebuilt that way. But because you're looking at $18 million, you know, you pick up the fifth year, and then eventually you got to extend them. They're like, you know what? We're not fully convinced yet. We've got so many other holes. Let's trade them. Let's draft somebody else who's making peanuts, and we'll start it the right way simultaneously with a new clock.
Yeah.
So, again, I love Schlereth's passion, but I think he omits several very important parts. I don't know if he said it before or after, and if he did, then, and I'm not criticizing, I'm just saying that I think if you just hear that rant, I don't think he's giving fans enough credit. Well, like, we want to see guys play well early, like to validate the first round pick, but nobody thinks that any of these guys are going to be Patrick Mahomes next year unless you're a dope. Who thinks that?
No, I don't think they
do. It's unrealistic.
Do, but I do think that the fan bases and even the general managers to an extent are enamored with finding that quarterback that they can claim as their own and look what we got. Look who we got type of thing. And look, if it works, it works. But we know that history proves that it doesn't always work. And the more prudent route is to slowly build something that's sustainable as opposed to trying to hit, you know, get lightning in a bottle, which isn't reality in the NFL. So, I mean, he's got a point. I understand your detraction to his point, but the question I think ultimately falls back to these guys, these quarterbacks, is, you know, how great can they be? And we never know, and nobody ever knows. Anything can derail their path towards glory.
Yep.
Whether it's, you know, just a bad team around them, a yep. bad coaching staff,
yep.
Injury. There's so many things that go in. But yep. at the end of the day, you know you have to have one. You have to have a quarterback if you're going to get to the ultimate goal. If you don't, it's just really, really hard to do it the other ways. And we've talked about those before, which
yep.
is build a great defense. And
handful of teams.
Handful of them over the last, you know, whatever it is,
30
years. Right?
Really, I would say even 30, 40.
Yeah, I mean, going back to the beginning.
Wow,
it's been forever.
I got you.
Right? You
yep.
know, it's just you can't win. Unless you have not elite, but like consistent and solid quarterback play, or you have an all-time defense.
Yeah, yeah. And it's really hard to be an all-time defense now because the rules are so different.
Yeah, that's right.
So that's even been mitigated.
Intimidation is gone. Yeah.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. I mean, the Bears of the 85, in succession, the Bears in 85 and the Giants in 86, they mm-hmm. intimidated the hell. Not only were they great fundamentally, schematically, yep. They scared you.
They were all big.
Mean, nasty. Their
linebackers were all DN size. I mean, seriously.
Yeah.
Lawrence Taylor, Harry Carson, and
Carl Banks.
Carl Banks are massive human beings.
Gary Reasons isn't too small either.
No, you're right. And so it's just a different intimidation factor that's now legislated out of the football.
There you go.
Unfortunately.
Yeah. No, absolutely unfortunate. No question. All right, T, good stuff. Let's get the update from Ack. I know there's some baseball action. Yanks lost again, by the way. Sorry, Ack. I mean, I know you'll tell everybody in a minute, but T, our Yanks lost again.
Yeah.
Yankees starting pitching is horrendous.
It's horrendous. They can't get deep in the games. And then while Judge did hit a home run, it's...
Hit two of them.
And he did two of them. That's all they're scoring.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? They can't manufacture runs, and that's not going to be good in the long haul.
And I got to tell you, I'm going to go on a 30-second Yankee. I'm getting a little tired here. I mean, Cashman, can you finally construct a championship team? Like, he's been here forever, right? And I like Cashman more than I don't, but everybody that knows baseball knew that Gleyber Torres cannot play shortstop. He is not a shortstop.
Mm-hmm.
So what do? You go into the season with Gleyber Torres at shortstop. What the Yankees should have done, they should have gotten Didi Gregorius, who was a great fielder and played well in the Bronx. And by the way, hit some bombs with the short porch in right field as a lefty, right?
Yep.
Get Didi on a 2-year, 30, whatever it would have been. Put him at short. Put Torres at second. Put DJ LeMahieu over at first base. Trade, and we love him. We love Voit. He's a 35-40 home run guy. Trade him. Get some interesting young pitching. Have Rochelle at third base, who's a great fielder. Instead, all the they shop at the bargain rack for these starting pitchers, mm-hmm. which is disgraceful when you have, you know, a guy like with Stanton. That's mm-hmm. part of the reason why you have to do it, because you can't go out and spend. This is George's son, not George. A little bit of a different edict upstairs from the Yankees brass. I get it. But what the Yankees are trotting out there with their starting pitching is disgraceful.
Yeah.
And once you get past Gerrit Cole, everybody stinks.
Yeah,
the entire rotation's terrible.
It's tough to watch them right now.
They are. Their bullpen's great, but they're going to be fried by July 1st. And if Gerrit Cole ain't pitching, Yanks ain't winning. I mean, the Yankee rotation is the worst I have seen in well over decades. Tanaka left, all right? You let him. He would have come back for another year, went back home, but he went back home because the Yanks weren't going to pay him. At least he was a sure thing. you know, give you a serviceable start almost every time. Yankee pitching stinks. Ack, take it away, buddy. What do you got? All right. Not often you get a baseball rant. It's not the kind of sport that's going to really generate a ton of rants, but they're annoying me. I mean, really, every year the Yankees kind of go to bat with the same stuff, and it's haven't been working for a while, guys. You know, Rays kind of keep beating you. Some other teams keep beating you. Might want to get some pitching one of these years. Anyway, Teek, let's answer our Ask the Pros question of the day here. It's brought to you by O'Reilly Auto Parts. Today's question is for Manuel in Boston. And Manuel says, hey, the Celtics won four straight. They're up to number five in the East. Could they make some noise in the playoffs? I would say yes. Take it first. Teek, go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, I guess so. As long as Jason Tatum, who interestingly is still having some after effects of him from his COVID.
Yes.
Whenever that was, 4 months ago, 5 months ago. So that's a little worrisome. But if he's healthy and feeling great, they can make some noise. I don't think they have a chance to win or get out of the East. But, yeah, they can make some noise.
You know, I don't disagree that the Tatum stuff is interesting. Maybe we can give that a couple of minutes tomorrow because he opens up, you know, part of the evaluation where you have to incorporate that. And if he is taking an inhaler before every game, as he said that he is, you know, I mean, I don't know if it's going to go away tomorrow, but if he's better in a month, maybe things change a little bit. And he's still a really good player, as we know. Think O'Reilly Auto Parts, all your car care needs, guaranteed low prices, and excellent customer service from the professional parts people at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Again, listen, no one's going to pick the Celtics to represent the East this year or next year unless they do something different. But the one thing that is interesting for them is that, and certainly the Bucks, of course. You get, for this, you have to include the Bucks. What I'm about to say. The unknown variables with the Nets and their injuries, and, you know, even the Sixers. You know, Embiid's got an injury history. Ben Simmons has an injury history here. Certainly not wishing that upon anybody. But if there's a team that could benefit, I mean, I would put the Bucks ahead of the Celtics for sure. But if either one of those teams gets dented further, or in Philly's case, a little, you know, again, then you never know. Could be pretty interesting in the East. But on paper, all healthy. Yeah, it's a two-man race, as we know.
Yep.
All right, Teek, you ready for the blast? See what we got?
Yep, let's do it.
Let's do it, buddy.
So many topics, so little time. We give you five stories in 5 minutes, but don't take too long or you'll suffer the buzzer. It's time for the Blast with Teekee and Tierney.
All right, former Steelers running back James Conner leaving Pittsburgh for the first time in his career. He played college there, high school ball as well, and pro ball in the city. He has signed on with the Cardinals. What are our expectations for Conner with the Cardinals?
I mean, I don't know if they're super high. I don't think he's making Pro Bowls. I think he can be a good situational player for them. But, I mean, the NFL has gone away from, especially with teams that have quarterbacks that are dynamic like Kyler Murray, from a workload running back. I think the Tennessee Titans are one. The Cowboys are another. Maybe Saquon gets back to that, but I'm not so sure.
Yep.
Hope so. I mean, he'll have a good season and as long as he's healthy. But I don't see him making the Pro Bowl.
No, neither do I here, Teague. I don't see Conner, you know, ripping off 1,297 yards with 12 touchdowns. I don't see that. But I do see more of a steadiness than we saw last year. He was banged up a little bit in Pittsburgh. I know he had surgery as well. So I could see him having, you know, good stats, but maybe bigger, some more frequent, bigger moments, if that makes sense, for a Cardinals team that you and I both think should be pretty good. So, you know, and by the way, when you talk about the Pittsburgh Steelers offensive line a year ago, they were bottom five in pass protection, bottom five in run blocking. They couldn't, you know, get the extra yard or two when they had to move the sticks for the tough yard with the game in the balance. He's not a superstar. He's a great story. Beat cancer. We're all rooting for him. Slightly above average NFL player. All right, last week we discussed how A-Rod's going to become partial owner of the Minnesota Timberwolves. Well, it turns out not everybody on the team or in the organization is starstruck by A-Rod, including the first overall pick, Anthony Edwards.
Are you an A-Rod fan at all growing up or anything like that? What you think about what he might bring to the team?
A fan? Who is he?
The baseball player? Alex Rodriguez?
Yeah, nah, I don't know what it is. Well, I know he's going to be the owner, but I don't know nothing about baseball.
That is amazing. What's our reaction to Edwards' comments? Number one, points for being blunt. Two, points for being honest. I mean, Who cares that he doesn't know who A-Rod, what is it? Oh, A-Rod. I mean, by the way, if anybody's ego is big enough to come in, watch him try to trade him. You didn't know who I am. I'm kidding. It is a definite jolt to A-Rod's out-of-control, enormous ego. I don't care what A-Rod said, kidding around. Hey, I'm Alex. Yeah, we know that deep down, when somebody like Alex Rodriguez, who inserts himself everywhere, the first overall pick in the NBA draft, doesn't know who he is, that dents his confidence, but... You know, A-Rod's a pro. Edwards a young baller. He's also 25 years younger than A-Rod. Who cares that he doesn't know who he is?
I agree. He grew up in Georgia, man. Didn't probably watch or follow baseball at all. So A-Rod actually sent him a note. I think it was on some social media platform.
He did. Like,
hey, I'm Alex.
Yeah.
I mean, what does it matter? Not much at all, unless A-Rod is heavily involved in the decision making of the Twins. But
uh-huh.
I mean, Timberwolves. But I don't think that that's going to necessarily be the case. I'm very curious to see what Alex's role is in this purchase. It was easy to see where Derek Jeter would fit with the Miami Marlins when he joined that purchasing group and took over the CEO role. What's A-Rod going to do with a basketball team?
He'd probably try to move him to Seattle. That's what he's going to do.
But what's his day-to-day job going to be?
Make more money than he needs to because he's already got a ton. And I will say this about Anthony Edwards. Again, I don't care that he doesn't know anything about baseball, but he also kind of saying without saying it, he doesn't really know much about pop culture either. A-Rod was with J-Lo forever.
Yeah.
I mean, you didn't once...
Not everybody cares about that.
I understand that. I prefaced it with that. But so he doesn't care about baseball, and he doesn't know pop culture. No, I'm not taking a knock at the guy. I don't care. But, I mean, A-Rod is... It's hard not to know who, at least on a cursory level, who A-Rod is. It's hard. Now, again, I don't begrudge the young man. I really don't care. I kind of like that A-Rod got a little dose of humble pie. But kind of interesting he doesn't even know, never heard of the guy. Like, to me, that is a little much, but we'll see. All right. Over the Hornets last night, the Lakers beat them. They couldn't beat the Knicks the previous night because the Knicks are rocking. But, of course, they did beat the Hornets without Ball. Lakers 6-4 in their past 10 without the dynamic duo, no LeBron, no AD. They're a 5 spot in the West right now, 5 seed. So with James and AD's injuries, can you maybe frame this as a blessing in disguise for the defending champs?
I mean, I guess you have to. If you're trying to be optimistic about the Lakers repeating and you hope that LeBron gets healthy and, more importantly, AD is viable once he gets into the postseason. But, yeah, I mean, you get more minutes for these guys, some experience. Kyle Kuzma gets to take on a more advanced role, so to speak. Schroeder he's the man at this moment as
Drummond.
The facilitator. Drummond is getting some burn as well. So, yeah. I mean, yeah, it is a blessing in disguise, except for you're falling out of the hosting a home game in the postseason, which I guess doesn't necessarily matter because I don't think the fan situation is going to be, back to normal come the postseason. But, I mean, it is nice to kind of have some momentum going into the postseason. Right now, I'm not sure they have that despite winning 6 of their last 10.
Yeah, I mean, listen, without Jamal Murray, the Nuggets are a very different team. The Clippers, we talked about Paul George before. He's had a renaissance. He's balling. Maybe they'll become the true threat that we all anticipated they would be when Kawhi and Paul George formed that union out there for the Clippers. I do think this is a real blessing in disguise because they haven't drowned. Like, if they're sitting here at the 10 seed, now we're like, wow, season imploded. What a waste. No, they didn't drown. Their head's still above water. And in the extended, elongated absence for these players, it's forced them to almost become more empowered, where now they'll have to kind of reacquaint themselves with their new roles when LeBron and AD, but that'll be easy because they knew what there was before. But this has put them in positions to have to take big shots, to try to win games, to get some double teams, to be the focal point of the offense, which I think, as they're relegated to their 3rd and 4th spots, Kuzma, Schroeder, etc., when the two stars are back, I think it only makes them better and more dangerous. So I think it is a blessing in disguise for sure. Provided the stars come back and they don't miss any more time and they're good to go after that. Joe West, an umpire, was awarded $500 in a defamation lawsuit against former big league catcher Paul LaDuca. LaDuca accused West of accepting a bribe to widen the strike zone years ago. Does Major League Baseball need to move the robot umps to take away the human element of the game? No. Do they need to move to the robot umps? No. Not yet. I'm going to fight that. And eventually it's going to be implemented, but I'm going to fight that tooth and nail. Mm-hmm. You know, before you know it, C-3PO or one of his cousins will be out there and we'll have to get used to it.
When is going to be a good time? Because it's not really...
Never going to be a good time
really
for me.
It's not really replacing with a robot. It's just an automatic strike or ball and the ref confirms it.
No, I know.
He's still there, but still. I mean, when would be a good time?
Never. For me, never. But you still need the umpire behind the plate up. Catcher's interference. You know, foul ball that hit you in the box or out of the box. In the box, foul. Out of the box, you're automatically out. Did the catcher run out of the baseline? Did the runner skew out of the baseline? I mean, bunts. Yeah, there's a lot of balks. There's a lot of things that are there for. So, to me, the problem is the strike zone. It's so up for interpretation. So I understand the need to incorporate that aspect of a robotic oversight committee. But I don't know. I guess I'm going to hang on to this one, kick it and scream. But I like the umps back there.
No,
but I know it's changing.
Yeah, I don't blame you. I mean, at the end of the day, you know, is it going to make pitchers throw to the spot more effectively?
Good.
Is a robot
good
or an automate?
Yeah.
But I don't know.
Mm.
I think pitchers are trying to throw to those spots, and sometimes they just miss.
Mm.
You know what I mean? They're not robot arms, right? So it's not like it's just a repetition of the same motion over and over again, sticking it on the spot.
Think about this, Teak. They also know that the conventional zone is really from the nipples to like the mid shin, right?
Yeah.
That's the way it's defined in the book. And nobody's getting this call up here. Nobody. So they don't even throw it there.
Yeah.
If you know that, because they're not going to get it. If you know that you're getting that call, you can easily pepper up top in the zone and then, you know, become more effective.
True.
I think it will be good for the pitchers, but.
It's interesting. Yeah. It's a good point.
Thank you, Teak.
Time's up. The blast is over for another day.
Teak, last practice tonight before opening day on Saturday, buddy.
Nice. So this is not kid pitch yet, correct?
No, this is that's the other team he's on. This is T-ball. This is the team that I manage.
Nice.
So we have practice, you know, as soon as I'm off the air, boom, I'm running to the car. He's already dressed, equipment's by the door, ready to roll. Yep, final workout. So, game's on Saturday, it's Wednesday. I got enough time to recover. I'll run him into the ground tonight. I'm just kidding.
You should. Just don't yell at him.
No.
Kids this age cannot be yelled at.
You don't have to ever tell me. I don't even yell at my son. Unless, like, he's, like, you know, doing something.
No, unless they're getting ready to hurt themselves.
Well, for sure, something like that. You know, yell at a kid for missing a grounder or running from home from first base to third without touching second.
I see some coaches.
I hear you. Well, if that happens in our league, we're going to have some issues. It's not going to be coming from me. If anybody ever sees me do that, take my hat, take the scorecard, and just ban me. That's not happening.
I feel you, brother.
Teak, have a great Wednesday night, buddy. I'll see you tomorrow.
You too, bro. Be well, man.
All right, man. I appreciate it. Everybody else out there, Odyssey.com. For all the Teak and Tierney content, go check it out. Have a great night. Safe, sensible, sane. We'll see you tomorrow. Bye-bye.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.